Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we're going to talk to Alana de Freitas, who is, without a doubt, one of the more talented people I'm going to talk to on the podcast because she's a writer, director, and producer of the film Nancy, but she's also an accomplished actress. In fact, I told her at the Q&A at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2019 how impressive it is when an actor makes a film this great and doesn't even put themselves in it, which always impresses me. Nancy won awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2019. I should have looked them up, but one more than one. I think Best Director, Best Picture, your lead actor got one. You kind of cleaned up the shorts category.
I'm blushing.
I know, and no one can see it. And anyway, before we start talking about it, one of the reasons Alana and I are talking today is because Nancy is in the Discover Indie Film TV series, which you can find on Amazon Prime Video. Just go to Prime Video and search for Discover Indie Film. And her film is in Season 4, Episode 2, with the Busta Birabira. So two fantastic dramas. Oddly enough, both made by Australians.
Oh, I
didn't know. Both actually Australian actors. Mm-hmm. Who are actually fairly successful actors who turned around and jumped behind the camera full time. So it's very interesting. I just wish we were in a non-COVID world where you and this gentleman, TJ, but like we could all just hang out and talk about what it's like to move to LA from Australia and be part of the industry.
That's so cool.
But anyway, I've given away that you're Australian for anyone who can't figure out the accent. But do please, we always start this Discover Indie Film podcast interview thing with your past, what led you to become a filmmaker, when your interests in it began, if you were acting as a kid, if you were writing, if whatever got you interested in this.
Yeah.
And then we'll figure out why you got so amazingly good at it.
It's funny, you know, I acted as a kid and then I kind of stepped away from the industry for a while, got caught up in the corporate world, working 9 to 5. And then long story short, eventually I found my way back to acting. I had my own company for a little while, which allowed me the flexibility to get back into acting classes. And I thought, oh, why did I give this up? This is what I want to do. So I sold everything and I moved over to the States to pursue it. And then once I got here, I was a little bit disenchanted with the types of roles that they had for women. It was, you know, always like the blonde bimbo role, or I'd have to be naked or something like that. So that's what got me into writing and producing. But when I look back to me as a kid, I used to transcribe my favorite movies and force my brother and my cousins to put on shows and perform them for my grandparents and my aunties and uncles. And I always thought, oh, you know, I was an actor from way back then. But I look back at it now and I'm like, oh no, that was me being like a little producer and a little director. I just didn't realize it. So yeah, I guess it's always been in me. But it wasn't until necessity brought it on that I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make my own stuff.
And the transcribing is really interesting to me because what better way to learn screenwriting than to take something you like and then convert it to a script?
Well, I mean, we're talking like I was like 8 years old. So I was just,
yeah,
my favorite scenes from little like Labyrinth or whatever, and getting my brother and my cousin to like be characters. And I would get so mad when they wouldn't take it serious or they'd get the lines wrong.
Which is wonderful. But it still sounds like a great foundation.
Yeah, it's funny.
And I know you ended up at the Beverly Playhouse here in LA, right?
Yeah, I was at the Beverly Hills Playhouse. I studied acting there for, I don't know, it'd have to be like 3 years. You know, that was like when I first moved out to LA. You know, when I first moved out, I didn't know anybody out here. So I had no friends and I was sad. Like I had no one to go out with or do anything with. And that was really where I made most of the friends I still have today. Like, they have a great community, and the good thing about that school is that they have like an on-site rehearsal space. And that is something that I've found with other schools is the tricky thing, because, you know, creatives can be a little bit flaky. So like finding a space where you can both meet up and rehearse is tricky. So having one on-site encourages people to be a lot more on their game and diligent and reliable. I really enjoyed my time there. And that's where most of my friends are from. So yeah, it's been great.
That's great. And you brought up the sexism of Hollywood and how a woman is treated, and treated that there's not much beyond her appearance, probably.
Right. They're just kind of fluff roles. Yeah. You're just like the ditzy girlfriend, or, you know, the love interest, or like the person they're having an affair with. There's just fluff.
For sure. So that's when you started writing in earnest with the intention of writing for yourself, or were you just writing out of frustration to tell stories?
Yeah. Look, initially I just wanted to write a role for myself. So I wrote my feature film Before the Dawn, and it was funny. We got such a quick start on things. I was very lucky. Like, I decided to write it in May, and then I started writing at the start of June. I finished at the start of July. We were shooting mid-August. We wrapped mid-September. And we had like a couple of pickup days in October. So I was like, boom, boom, boom. And then I spent 2.5 years in post.
Was that because you were busy, or was that... Well, because it's an indie and budget-wise?
Yeah, micro budget. And so, you know, that means that a lot of your editors and sound designers and stuff are working on weekends. And I was lucky that, you know, I found people who would do it for a reduced rate because they believed in the project. But, of course, you know, they still have to pay their bills, so they're prioritizing bigger paying jobs during the week and just like slotting this in what they can fit in on a weekend. So yeah, it definitely draws the time frame out. But it also, you know, was the first feature film that I had produced. So I was very much, it was my film school. I was learning as I went. And, you know, the film is better for the time that we took, because I kept learning a little bit more and then being like, actually, I want to change this and I want to change that. And our director, Jay Colburn, he was amazing and, you know, taught me so much on that journey. So it just took a very long time to get done. And you know, I was doing everything myself as well. Like, there was no music supervisor. I spent hundreds of hours listening to music from indie musicians, just like trying them in different scenes and trying to find out what worked. Everything, you know, just moves a lot slower when you don't have money. And that's fine. Like, I actually am grateful for that experience, because it forced me to wear so many different hats and learn so many different things. It's really, like, served me since then. So it came out, we shot it in, you know, August, September of 2017. It came out October 2019. So that was how long it took, yeah.
So actually it came out, coincidentally, a month before I met you at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. And you didn't even mention it, I don't think.
Yeah, I probably didn't. Caught up in Nancy.
Caught up in Nancy. By the way, I was going to ask, during that 2.5 years, did you do any reshoots after this long post process, or were you?
No,
so we didn't have that luxury.
My amazing editor Asin Ali we had been using Frame.io, and so he had been cutting as we went. So I had an assembly cut 5 days after we wrapped. And then we did a feedback screening very soon. I mean, we made some changes obviously after the assembly, but we did a feedback screening pretty quickly and realized that there was one particular element of the film that wasn't working. It was in a combination of some of our supporting characters, and we decided to recast that and reshoot that. So I think there were 3 or 4 pickup days that we did on October. and some of that was reshooting. And coincidentally, the day that we decided to reshoot, we got this property out in Santa Clarita, the same property we'd shot it on the first time, and a bloody mariachi band is playing at a birthday party next door. So it was one of those things like, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. So we shot it all, but we ended up having to ADR the whole thing. But it worked so much better than it had the first time around. So, but outside of that, from, you know, October through to October in that 2 year period, no, there were no other reshoots.
Right. So just that one thing that needed. Yeah. And I was going to say, I applaud you. I mean, sometimes you can get lucky with free help, but having a true professional, having really talented people do it in their spare time often turns out better than if you just settle for a sound mixer who just doesn't have the talent to be busy.
Yeah, Tripp, Bradley Tripp Clark was our sound designer, and he put so much work into it, and he was amazing. And, you know, we had Nami Malumad. She's done some phenomenal composing and won so many awards for her work. She spent so much time working on it for us, and you know, I'm just so grateful for the time that everyone put into it, because, you know, we really were working on a budget of peanuts. But yeah, I don't think you can tell when you watch the film.
I bet not. And so it was during that post period you were still doing stuff at the Playhouse, and then Nancy came around because they do their film festival everyone has to.
Mm-hmm. So I actually had been away in Australia, and then I came back, and everyone was prepping for Beverly Hills Playhouse Film Festival. And so they encouraged the actors there to get together and make their own little short films and put on their own little festival. And everyone had kind of already started, and I was like, I want to make something. And then I just decided, you know, I'll quickly just put something together. And it kind of got put together in a matter of like 2 or 3 weeks, just like casting, getting, you know, SAG approvals and writing it and finding crew and everything. And then, similar sort of thing, like listening to music again. I brought Nami on as a composer again, worked with a different crew, and I worked with, obviously, actors from the Beverly Hills Playhouse. Michael Yavnielli, our lead actor, was actually one of my teachers at the Beverly Hills Playhouse as well. And then our other actors, Cameron Meyer plays the mother, and Rahat Adams plays the son. And then we have a little role from Brian McKinley as one of Michael's colleagues in it. So yeah, it that came together very quickly. And I originally had it with a different song, like a bigger song in the closing credits, which, you know, cost more than the entire movie to make. But I only had that song for festivals for 1 year only domestically. So then when we started talking about putting it in Discover Indie Film, I was like, okay, it's going to cost me a fortune to keep that track in it and have it distributed. So I pulled that track out, and I have an amazing track in there from The Purist that we swapped it out with. And I actually think it works better tonally. So I'm really glad actually that happened. So yeah, it all worked out.
I'm glad too, but I don't even know if I knew from our Q&A in 2019 that you threw it together so quickly. Was this an idea that had been brewing, or did you just sit down and this story came out? Because I have to say, the screenplay for Nancy is so subtle and so well written, and these characters, I just, every time I watched it again this morning to prepare to have this conversation, and I have to say, it's just one of the best, you know, it's so well written and so balanced, and the characters are so, you know, these characters are fully fleshed out in a short.
Thank you. It wasn't really something that had been, not at least consciously, brewing. You know, I pre- producer brain sometimes takes over with me. And so I am strategic in the way that I go about things. So I thought that it was topical, the subject matter. But also, you know, I was thinking about the actors that I had access to and, you know, who had more of a profile, etc. And Rahat has done some amazing work. You know, he was in Pacific Rim and a bunch of other things. So, you know, I'm just being completely transparent about it. I was like, what's going to give me the best bang for my buck here? And just the writer that I am, I like to, you know, every story pretty much has been told before. So I'm like, what's a different spin on it? And I feel like you always see the story from the perspective of the person who is coming out as gay. And I wanted to see it from the perspective of like the person, the parents struggling with hearing that and what that is about in them. So that's kind of, you know, how I approached it. I love what the actors did with it. I kind of just let them go. I honestly, like, you know, they did a lot of my job in directing for me. I'd like to take more credit, but, they know what they're doing.
So you did the John Huston School of Acting, which is 90% of acting is casting, and you did cast wonderfully, but also you had the instinct to tell the father's story. And you decided not to go over the top sympathy or this or that. It's very believable and very natural. And how difficult it is. And then of course you have like the nicest ending.
Well, I just wanted it to be like real, you know, because I don't really believe in black and white. Like, I read this meme the other day, something about Ted Bundy, about how he'd like saved some kid from drowning and like helped a woman whose purse had been snatched and stuff like that. And like, you know, people are complicated. I think we have good and bad sides, and a lot of that, maybe Ted Bundy's a bad example, but a lot of just like from the experiences that we've had in our life, and we haven't had things opened up to us to make us think about things from a different perspective. There are people in my family or people that I know very closely who I think would maybe struggle with hearing something like that at first. And so I just kind of wanted to explore what that's about. You know, like Ian, Michael Yavnialli's character, he's not a bad guy. He just like did not see that coming. And he's just like your everyday dude. And he just like has to get his head around it. And it makes him think about like, you know, the behaviors he's had his entire life growing up, you know, all through school and the things, you know, being part of like the jock squad and those things that have a lifetime of being embedded in you. A lot of that stuff is generational and gets passed down. And unless there's something that breaks that cycle, it's just going to continue to come down. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as a dad and a coach and this and that, one of the things I really love about it is how it really shows us that it's the things we don't think about. It's the thoughtlessness that you end up regretting because, you know, when you, especially, and by the way, I happen to be a lot closer in age to the dad than the son. So yeah, I grew up in a world where all my friends who I grew up with, who are now out, you know, they came out in their 30s and 40s.
Right.
And it's such a relief. And now we've got a 13-year-old girl in the house and there's boys in her middle school who are out in middle school. And I'm like, oh my God, they're getting to live their truth so much earlier than my generation.
Yeah.
So I kind of greatly appreciate how Nancy captures this moment in time of really almost transition for us as a culture, like getting our acts together about this.
Right. And I think like, you know, as a society, we like in some ways we put a lot of weight in words and in other ways we don't. We are more now, but like, you know, when I was growing up, you would be like, oh, that's so gay, or oh, you faggot, or like stuff. You know, I, like those are things like my brother and I would say to each other, and like with no real concept of any meaning behind that or negative. Like, obviously, we were saying it as insults, but not like associating anything with homosexuality to it. And so it's just a little bit strange the way that, like, we use words without fully understanding them. And I think, you know, we've moved forward in political correctness with, which I think, you know, sometimes can go to an extreme, but I think, you know, we've made positive steps forward in that respect.
Oh, absolutely. No, actually, I have a personal, that happened to me personally, where the term gay had been used for lame, you know, for most of our lives. And then, you know, you're in LA, you're in the film business, and all of a sudden you have a coworker and it's, and you say it, and then you move from that room to the next room and your friend who is gay looks you in the eyes and says, "I'm sure you meant cool." And I was like, holy fuck, I'm never saying that again. I, you know, and it takes a personal moment for you to realize what the toxicity that we grew up in.
Yeah, totally.
And I love how your character, how your father character, Ian, just how that level of realization and his level of regret is just wonderful storytelling.
Yeah, he's just like replaying like everything through the past of like what he said and like what kind of effect that might have had on his son growing up. Yeah.
And his son is... doesn't give him a hard time about it at all. His son is just like, I love you, Dad. Just be dad.
Just parenting his dad a little bit there. Like, you know, when he has to be like, I know you didn't mean it, like comforting him. Yeah.
Well, so that's the script. And by the way, I did want to mention that I think your direction is fantastic in the film too. I love the intimacy. I love how we feel such warmth in the household in that opening scene. And then you change your directing style as it moves from scene to scene and we're like closer or further from the characters. And I just think it's very well done.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're, is directing more directing your future or do you have more of a producer's mind?
I would love to direct more. You know, I think any filmmaker will tell you that funding is their biggest challenge. So, you know, I have a couple of projects in development that I've written or put together that I would love to direct. Now it's just about finding the coin.
That is the biggest challenge.
Yes.
Films aren't free. And you seem to be a fairly, and I'm saying this because of Instagram or whatnot, social media shows me that you have a very good work ethic. You are frequently sharing pictures of your laptop with, and you're like, I'm screenwriting today. And I'm like, I can name a lot of screenwriters who don't put as much time into it. You know,
it's one of those things that like feeds itself. Like, you know, people will say to me, it's similar to working out. Like, how often do you work out? And I'm like, if you see it on Instagram, that's how often I work out. So it, like, you know, it'll prompt me to do it. Like, oh, I need to post something. So what can I post? Okay, do some writing or do some exercise.
That's a nice twist. So social media is making you more productive because you're like, well, I've got to show people I'm being productive. I can't be doing nothing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll explain that a little bit more because without context, it maybe sounds very twisted, but I earn more money the more engagement I have with social media. So it's not just that, like, I want to be out there like, hey, everybody look at me. But like, you know, Before the Dawn, my feature film is on, you know, Amazon Tubi, Pluto TV, YouTube Movies, Roku, and Google Play. And I notice a difference quarter on quarter if I have been pretty slack in engaging with social media or if I have been on top of it that quarter, I can earn double or triple what I'd earned the quarter before based on how much I engage with my following. So that's what drives me.
Exactly. You're not sitting around going, I want everyone to know who I am. I want to be an influencer. You're doing specific things to raise the profile of your work.
Right.
And, and it, there's a direct payoff for it.
And narcissist. It's maybe like 20%.
I definitely don't. You don't come across as a narcissist at all. In fact, I'm with you. I struggle with that too. When I was told you've got to be more active in social media for the sake of the film festivals, okay. I was like, really? Do I? Because I thought I just got to hide behind a keyboard most of the time and then come out to a theater twice a year.
It's a lot of work though. Like I have 5 Instagram accounts between my personal, my business and other projects. And we just started another project. And I said to my producer, Anna, I'm at the limit for amount of accounts that I have. Like, you're going to have to run this one. So, you know, at a certain point, I'll drop off some older projects. But, yeah, like, to be creating content for 5 different accounts, like, that could be a full-time job in itself. And there was a little while there where I was, you know, basically only doing that. And you know, I've chosen to take a step back from it because it was just, like, too mentally exhausting and I wasn't getting any development work done. But, you know, at some point, if I'm ever able to afford an assistant, I will definitely have them on top of that because I do think that I can see, you know, financial rewards from it.
For sure. And I guess I should ask, are you pursuing the acting thing beyond the producing thing? Are you auditioning and stuff? Or are you really more focused on your own work?
Look, I definitely am still acting, you know, but here's what I'll say. I have less control over that than anything else. Like, you know, I feel like I do my admin where that's concerned. I, you know, regularly, semi-regularly reach out to casting directors and say, like, hey, this is what I've been doing. This is what I'm working on. But outside of that, you know, I don't cast those projects. So, you know, I wait for auditions to come through from my reps. I audition for things. So, writing and producing, I have a lot more control over. In terms of my acting projects, I have 3 films that are awaiting release. You know, COVID put everything kind of back. So, you know, there's a film that I shot back in 2018 called Bashira. It's a horror film. And I'm told that should finally get its release sometime between October and January, God willing. I think that one will be super cool. I'm really looking forward to that. It's got a lot of visual effects. It's kind of, when I read the screenplay, it's kind of like The Grudge, but like younger and with an EDM soundtrack. So I think it'll be really cool. And then I have a comedy called Cash Collectors, which is supposed to be premiering at the Chinese Theatre in November, if everything goes according to plan. I'm actually shooting a couple of scenes for that tomorrow, and then my final scenes for that the following Friday. So they're just getting the last little things they need to finish the film. And then I also had a tiny little role as a comedian, believe it or not, in an independent comedy called Micah's. And that is, I think they've just wrapped up post-production and we'll start looking for distribution shortly. So there's a couple of other acting projects that are awaiting release. It's just, you know, COVID kind of slowed everything down.
It did. And then actually you had a film in the Sherman Oaks Film Festival during COVID for Life, the one you produced in one of those film chase sort of things, right?
It's the Women's Weekend Film Challenge. For Life, I was selected to be part of that challenge, and I was given a crew of like 30, 35 women, something like that. And we had, like a Thursday to a Monday morning we were given a genre, given a prop, and we had to make a film around it. And it was so fun. And we had amazing sponsors, you know, like Red, HBO, Able Cine, Cinelise, Audio Department. They were all really great. We to get to work with top-of-the-line equipment and not have to worry about any funding is such a blessing. And so we actually got to premiere that at the Hollywood Arclight literally, like, a week or two before we went into lockdown. So I'm so grateful that we got to see it on the big screen and for everyone involved that they got that experience. And then, that was my first film that was really impacted in terms of the festival circuit for by COVID, because everything just went online and we missed out on all of those like in-person networking events. But, you know, shit happens.
Shit happened to everyone. So at least it was, as I've always heard people talk about COVID, at least it was an even playing field. It pretty much hit us all.
That's exactly.
And I'll throw in, you know, I think For Life is just superb. The fact that you and the director, Jaka, were able to pull that film off in a weekend.
Yeah.
Super, super film. Really great film.
I actually felt really proud about the feedback, you know, because we had such a huge in-person audience and so many people came up to us afterwards and were like, you know, because we screened all the films from that weekend challenge. There were 6 films. And they were like, you know, we loved your film because it made us laugh and it also made us cry and it had a twist in the end. So I felt like we hit all the beats that we wanted to hit in it. And, you know, the genre we were given was buddy comedy and we actually had kind of a dark or sad twist. But I'm happy with it.
A little, but it worked.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, but I mean, I kind of experienced what that lead character experienced thanks to COVID. And Boy,
I think that's why
it was refreshing.
People, you know, as that year continued to go on the festival circuit, I think you're right.
Yeah, my Lord, I guess we're going to see a lot of films about loss in after what the world went through.
I think so. Or maybe people will just be tapped out and it'll be all, you know, puppy movies or something.
I don't think you're wrong. In fact, I think our streaming habits at home have drifted so much towards comedy now.
Yeah, I'm not generally someone who leans towards comedy. I always call my tastes like miserable bitch because I love something that will make me cry or whatever. But I will say I don't so much lean towards that at the moment, and especially anything with like violence. I just like never really bothered me before, and now I'm just like violence and like depression, and I'm like, yeah, there's probably enough of that in the world right now.
We definitely, escapism has always been one of the roles of art for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, that was it's funny. You named so many projects you have either coming or that you finished right before COVID or this or that I can't even keep track of them all. So you truly are.
I didn't even talk about the 3 things I have in development. The hustle is real. I mean, you have to. You have to be like on it in this. You have to have a finger in a million pies because you never know what's going to get picked up or what's going to get funded. Like, you just have to be pushing so many different things. It's a lot.
Absolutely. And you're not letting go of Before the Dawn. I mean, you have this Before the Dawn fan base that is growing. And if you do you talked about social media, but also if you, by having connection to that fan base, you can keep them involved in other things you do.
Right, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And there, you know, people are always like, what are you doing next? I want to see the next thing. And although, you know, everybody wants me to do sequel, and I don't majorly have an appetite for that just because I feel like I've done that. Why would I continue to do it? Let's tell something new. But it's very flattering that people are invested enough to want to see more of that story.
And are they, do you get feedback that they want you on camera more?
Yeah.
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 And do you have any preference or you're happy to do it all?
Sorry?
I said, do you have a preference or are you happy to do it all?
I'm happy to do it all. Look, I love acting. It's just, you know, I am admittedly a little bit of a control freak and I have so little control over that aspect of my career in terms of like what I audition for, what I would book, what the roles are. I think I have probably more longevity in as a writer, producer, director. So that's, you know, a fantastic tool for keeping myself busy in between acting jobs and in between auditions. So, yeah.
And you're such a good director. And I know people do direct themselves, but people who direct themselves at the Hollywood level have such huge crews.
Right.
That they don't have to be as hands-on. But at the indie level, directing yourself might mean a lot of compromise, I would think.
I would think so because, like, as we know, time is money. And if you've got to be jumping behind the camera to look at what you're doing and then back in front of it. Yeah, like, you know, I have two projects in development that I plan on directing. One of them is a documentary, which I would not be in front of the camera for. And the other one is a horror feature. And I did not write a role for myself in that. I mean, I could have, but I would much rather direct the story. So, and it wasn't that I intentionally was like, am I going to write myself or not? It was just, I'm going to write the story as whatever the story is. And there just didn't happen to be a role for me in it. So, yeah, I'd be very happy to direct that and not be in it. I'm not at a point, you know, I'm very self-aware in that my directing experience is limited. I feel so confident in my ability to direct actors. My technical knowledge, I am not there yet. I'd need a strong DP to guide me with that. But I would not throw myself in the deep end and want to direct and star at the same time. I'm a little ways off from that. I'd be happy to just focus on learning the ropes of directing and just focus entirely on what the vision for the project is.
Makes perfect sense. You have a very, well, and I learned from the brief bio you shared that you did actually leave the creative and you were in the business world. So that head for business is showing, I think, that practicality and savvy.
I had a career in finance for 7 years, and I definitely think that the transferable skills there that I got in people leading and project management have served me so well in going into producing. That Yeah, I kind of, you know, there's part of me that always feels like, oh, I wish I'd gotten to this point in my life sooner. But honestly, I wouldn't have gotten here if I hadn't gone through that to get those skills. So it's for a reason.
Right. It gave you some really superb tools.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Fantastic. Was there anything else you want to mention? You did say there are three more in development, but it's up to you you mentioned.
Called Why I Didn't Report, which I, have spent a couple of years interviewing people all around the world about the reasons why they chose not to report their sexual assault. That came about because when the Me Too movement happened, there was this undercurrent of dialogue, people saying, oh yeah, but why didn't they say something at the time? Or if that really happened, they would have said something. And I think that's very invalidating and discrediting to survivors. So I wanted to address why actually people don't come out and say something. That's being pitched around at the moment. And then, like I just mentioned, my horror film, Stay Awake, is a supernatural thriller. It's like a breadcrumb trail of clues looking for a serial killer. And then this isn't one that I wrote or will be directing. It's a one that I'm producing. It's a French project that my producing partner Jacques Soiree and I have translated and developed, and it's a horror comedy, and it's super meta and it's super fun, and it's basically like what happens when the black characters in a screenplay refuse to play into the trope of being the characters who die first. So they throw the whole script off balance, and it's just so fun, but like so meaningful as well. So I'm excited about that one.
I'm excited too. And that's great to hear that your collaboration with her is continuing. That's great.
Yeah. We've got a couple other projects. Those ones are all ready to go. We've got a couple other ones that are still in development stages that we're working as well. So yeah, it's been a good partnership.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I guess we can wrap up. Are we ready to wrap up? And then
sure.
And then we actually stop recording, and then we'll do your answers to the four questions.
Okay, cool.
But before we go, I have to do what I always call the house cleaning, housekeeping, which is mentioning all the websites and social media handles. So yes, the TV series that Alana's film Nancy is in is Discover Indie Film on Amazon Prime Video. And we actually are looking at other platforms, but you can watch it right now if you go to Amazon Prime Video and search for Discover Indie Film. And her film is in season 4, episode 2. And if you want to learn more about that or this podcast, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's @DIFWINS. and the film festival that Alana's had two films in, actually 2 years in a row, which is always impressive when someone keeps coming back with a film every year. That's the Sherman Oaks Film Festival that's every November here in Sherman Oaks in Los Angeles. That's ShermanOaksFF.com, and on social media, it's at ShermanOaksFF. And the film festival has a sister festival called Film Invasion Los Angeles, and that's every June. And you can learn about that at filminvasionla.com. And on social media, it's at filminvasionla. And finally, I warned you about this. Is there a website or social media you want to mention for people?
Sure. My Instagram is Alana_DeFreitas. So it's ALANA_DeFreitas. And my business Instagram is ADF Prods, PRODS, ADF Productions. And then in the bio of both of those accounts, you'll be able to access all of my links to my websites and everything else.
That's true. That's a good point. Maybe I don't have to do the .coms anymore. I can just say, and the .coms are in the link, are in the profiles.
Yeah, I think I have a link tree on ADF Productions that links to, like, Before the Dawn and everything.